Something less than an hour passed while Bridget and Grant remained in hiding under the camo tarp. They stayed still in the event that the raiders set out motion detectors to warn them if anyone might try to approach.
They're letting Kearney go.
Bridget shifted her binoculars around and watched as Kearney staggered to a jeep that had been salvaged from the traitor convoy. The mag seemed barely able to move under his own power, but he got the wag going, heading east along the White River.
So they are sending him back to Cobaltville.
Yeah, the cat's faster than the wag is. If we get out of here anytime soon, it might be interesting to look old Kearney up, see what the message is that he's supposed to deliver.
I want to find Kane and Domi.
Yeah, but lucky for us, the river's headed the same way. We'll find one, then we'll find the rest.
Kane's eyes ached from watching the water for anything that might benefit them. He and Domi had floated downriver at least a click or more, surfacing only to grab a deep gulp of air until they were out of sight of the raiders. A war wag had trailed along the north bank for a while, but didn't wander out of sight of the others. Evidently, the raider commander was interested only in securing the canyon. They'd been out of the water for 20 minutes. Along the way, Kane pulled three corpses from the river, stripped their bodies of anything useful, and shoved them back in. He knew Bridget and Grant would be along as soon as they could. He refused to consider that anything could have happened to them. Grant was too well trained, and Kane believed his connection, whatever it was, would allow him to know if something really bad had happened to Bridget. So far, he'd added an M14 to replace Domi's lost 30-30 rifle. They also had a 38 hand blaster, a chopped-down shotgun with a pistol butt, and extra rounds for the 45.
Somebody's coming!
Domi lay on her stomach atop one of the few hillocks that swelled up at the river's edge, a bare outcrop of sandstone, blasted smooth by the wind over centuries. They'd chosen the place because it afforded a view of the river, as well as access to the tall stand of rock overlooking one of the trade routes. Kane trotted up the grade, keeping low to the ground as he made his way. After staying out in the blistering heat and the dry wind, only his pant legs were wet from wading in after the last corpse. He held the shotgun at his side. It had five rounds in the magazine. He lay beside Domi, close enough to the ground that his breath raised tiny plumes of dust. The wag rolled over the desert erratically, as if the driver was struggling with the wheel. Kane considered the possibilities as the wag approached. He estimated the speed at around 30 or 35 miles per hour, pressing it, actually, for the terrain, and adding to the driver's difficulty at controlling the vehicle. If he had to, he figured he might be able to jump onto the front of the wag, maybe grab hold of the windscreen before he fell off. The other option was to shoot out a tire, but the sound of the shot might carry back to the battle zone. The wag kept coming, now within 100 yards. Kane noticed the driver was a big man in mag armor with a broad face he could almost recognize.
Do you see a spare tire? I think I see one on the back.
It's there, maybe flat.
Hope not. I'm gonna try for the wag. If I miss it, shoot out a tire. One tire. Then cross your fingers we can change it quick in case the raider's here.
Shoot out tire now!
No.
Kane handed her the shotgun and drew his combat knife.
I'm gonna try to take the wag quietly first.
Jump on?
Not if you want to do it instead.
Fuck no, that's stupid!
Thanks for the support.
Kane waited until the wag was within 30 yards, maintaining a low profile. Then he pushed himself up, rushing at the wag from the blind spot. As Kane rushed at the wag, the mag's name suddenly dropped into his head. Kearney. Kane had pulled an assignment in the pits a couple of times with the man, but had never talked to him at any other time. Kearney reacted slowly. Kane was almost on top of the wag before the mag tried to pull it to the side and avoid him. Kane pushed himself, summoning up his full speed, stretching his legs out as his feet pounded the ground. Less than 10 feet from the wag, he flung himself forward. Kane hit the front of the wag hard. He grabbed the fold-down windscreen with his left hand, hoping the leather gloves he'd stripped from one of the river corpses were strong enough to keep the metal from slicing into his hand. He slid across the front of the wag, watching to see if Kearney tried to pull a blaster. His left boot dragged against the ground, striking rocks, creating enough of a drag to almost pull him off the wag. Kearney tried jerking on the wheel, but it was too late. In the next moment, Kane flowed over the windscreen. He slapped away the man's arm and pressed the combat knife against his throat.
Stop the wag!
A trickle of scarlet blood started down Kearney's neck. Kearney put his foot on the brake and brought the wag to a rocking stop. Domi ran up, her M14 steady on Kearney. Kane scanned the man carefully, noting the empty place on Kearney's arm where the Sin Eater would normally have been. He guessed the raiders had stripped him and set him free. Still, he was careful enough to search the mag.
Out of the wag, Kearney. Domi, if he moves when I don't give him permission, put a round between his eyes.
Count on it.
Kearney heaved himself out of the wag as if he were ill. He stood on trembling legs. The white bandages around them were dark with blood. Kane gave the man a wolf's grin.
Kane, I'd heard you were a traitor. Then I heard you were dead, alive, and then dead again. Cobaltville doesn't seem to be able to know what to call you.
You had your head handed to you today, Kearney.
I guess there's more than one fucking traitor in Cobaltville these days.
I didn't remember you as being a right and proper flag waver.
Times change.
Not you. The Baron must be getting desperate.
Kane watched the anger sweep through the big man.
Think twice. My friend's got you in her crosshairs. You couldn't take me when you had two good legs under you, and you're sure as shit not gonna outrun that bullet.
I've gotta sit. They shot my legs to hell.
Kane nodded. Kearney did it right, moving slowly, keeping his hands in sight at all times, then lacing them on top of his head.
Another wag's coming!
Kane looked up sharply, spotting the sand cat streaking across the desert, but he didn't think any of them would have gotten away this late after the ambush. Still, he waited tensely while it stopped and the USMG 73 machine gun locked in on their position. Then Grant stepped out of the pilot's seat and waved.
Don't shoot him, Kane. He's got intel.
Kane grinned at Grant, who walked over as Kane turned back to Kearney, his eyes growing cold.
Tell it. All of it.
He and Grant and Domi stood over Kearney. Bridget stayed with the Sandcat to act as defense and lookout. In reality, Kane knew she didn't come over because she knew if Kane and Grant believed Kearney was lying to them, they wouldn't stop short of using whatever means they saw fit to get the truth. As for Domi, she didn't mind torture at all. In fact, she could be quite creative.
Cobaltville's ore shipments have been disrupted. At first. But then the ore shipments started disappearing.
How?
Nobody fucking knew, Kane. That's why we were sent out here, to get the ore convoys going again.
Kane studied the man's eyes, noticing the way Kearney didn't meet his gaze.
That's part of it. What's the rest?
At Kane's signal, Domi stabbed one of her knives into the sand less than an inch from his crotch. Ah! Eyes widening, focused totally on the knife buried to the hilt, Kearney swallowed hard.
There was a man named Chapman.
What about him?
He's a scavenger, up around Seattle. Place used to be some kind of comp design lab back before Skydark. He's been bringing tech to Cobaltville, selling it straight to the Baron's reps.
What kind of tech?
Comp progs, hardware, I don't know, Kane. You remember how it is, they don't tell you everything. Just enough to point your ass in a direction and tell you who to chill. Most of this I put together out of what little I was told or overheard.
Why'd they let you go?
Kearney's forehead glistened with sweat and his eyes were bright with fever. Kane wondered if the man would survive the trip back to Cobaltville.
That fucking bitch wanted me to take a message to the Baron.
What bitch?
Big silver-haired bitch running the Raiders. Called herself Ambika. Looks like no one I've ever seen before.
Kane glanced at Grant.
I saw her. He's telling it true.
Kearney, you've never heard of her before?
No.
What are you supposed to tell the Baron?
That he's got to stay away from the Utah territories because she's taken him over.
She say where she was from?
No.
Do you have any idea where she's from?
Negative. All I know is she's not from around here. Fuck, Kane. Think about it. She's got goddamn mil-spec hardware. Uses bastard ammo like she shits rocket rounds after every meal. And a trained crew looks like they're getting 3 square meals a day and a good bed to sleep in. If I knew where they were taking enlistments, I might go sign up myself.
Kane sat in the Sandcat's co-pilot seat and stared at the topographical maps they had of the area. Nowhere on the maps could he find a place where Ambika and her raider forces could have appeared from thin air. He folded the maps as Bridget climbed in the Sandcat.
Did Lakesh tell you anything he didn't tell the rest of us?
Her jade gaze tightened and narrowed.
You realize you just accused Lakesh and me of lying to you, don't you?
It wouldn't have been the first time Lakesh held something back from us.
But you also assumed that I'd held it back on you.
Too late, Kane realized she was exactly right. It was a mental glitch, maybe just thinking out loud.
How do you think Ambika moved her troops around in this area without being detected?
Through a gateway. That's fairly obvious at this point, isn't it?
Kane figured she had at least one shot coming after his own indiscretion.
Has to be a gateway out there somewhere. The raiders didn't come from this direction. Grant and I checked out both sides of the river. We didn't see any tracks from all the rolling stock Ambika and her raiders had used. I don't think they could have come from around Duchesne without being noticed.
We did.
You and Grant were one wag, Baptiste. Ambika fielded 20. The gateway has got to be located somewhere to the north. There's a mountain range up there.
The Uinta Mountains. I know. I looked at the maps, too.
Let's go back to the canyon and see what we can find out from there.
I don't think that's a good idea.
It probably isn't. Ambika could have positioned guards to cover her tracks. If there's a gateway up here that nobody knows about, it's going to be protected. But it's the only way we're going to find out anything. It's a slim chance at best.
A real one percenter.
Kane gave her a look, checking to see if she was still being sarcastic, but nothing in her green eyes or the set of her mouth gave her away. He thought she was the most desirable woman he'd ever seen, and the most damnably frustrating.
Yeah, a real one percenter.
Bridget held his gaze for a moment as if challenging him. Then she looked out of the obslit at Kearney, still under guard from Domi.
What are you going to do with Kearney?
I'm going to give him some supplies, give him a couple of pills to keep his pain down to a manageable level, and hope like hell he makes it to Cobaltville before he dies.
Why?
Kane gave her a crooked grin.
Don't worry, Baptiste. I'm not getting soft. He's got a message to deliver to the Baron, and I want to help see that it's delivered.
Right. You wouldn't want to spoil that ruthless bastard image you've cultivated.
She climbed out of the sandcat and walked away before Kane could respond. Lakesh stood through force of will alone. He gazed over Bri's shoulder and waited for the satellite to come online and let him know what had happened in Dead Man's Walls Canyon.
Have you slept?
Glancing over his shoulder, Lakesh saw Dufour standing behind him.
Yesterday, my dear doctor. Thanks for your concern.
Yesterday isn't good enough.
Dufour came around beside him, automatically reaching to snare one of his skinny arms and start taking his pulse. Lakesh politely and firmly retracted his arm from her grip.
Dear lady, there have been far too many things to do to consider sleep.
He caught a couple of 20-minute naps in one of the chairs.
You haven't had any sleep either, Bri?
Too much to do.
You can't keep pushing yourself, Lakesh.
Thank you for feeling protective. But I've been judging what I could and couldn't do for far too many years to be surprised. And I refuse to knuckle under to the ravages of time while I can still think.
You push yourself too hard, and one day you're not going to be there when they do need you.
Lakesh smiled faintly at her before nodding at the display screen, showing Kane, Grant, Bridget, and Domi's transponder signals.
They need me now. Even as we speak, a Deathbird contingent is streaking toward the region where they are. They're answering the plea for assistance that came from the Magistrate force already there. Kane and the others don't know that, though I am hoping they've taken that into consideration.
Contact them. Tell them to get out of there and...
We can't, my dear doctor. As yet, at least one of our unvanquished foes remains in the area. If we attempt to send a communication while they're possibly scanning the area, we could alert them to the presence of our people there.
Even as good as I am, you realize that too much stress and lack of rest could cause rejection of those transplanted organs. Get some sleep.
Yes, I remember the warnings from the first set of organs I'd had transplanted. All I can say, my dear doctor, is that I yet remain.
Lakesh watched while the display screen cleared as the sat uplink came online.
The Raiders are still there.
Lakesh leaned in closer, his eyes burning from looking at comp screens and the Mercator map all night. He spotted the wags highlighted on the screen. The satellite view was distant, pulled back to where each of the wags was reduced to half the size of one of his thumbnails.
Where are they?
Past the Yampa Plateau. Further west was a town called Vernal. Maybe there's a ville there now by the same name. North is the Dinosaur National Monument. Further north is the Flaming Gorge Lake.
What's the Dinosaur National Monument?
Info says it's the Green River. And a quarry with a number of fossil remains of dinosaurs and other ancient animals. It says that a monument and federal sanction was awarded to the site. Not all of the fossils were removed. Many of them left visible in the different strata, revealed by the erosion of the Green River as it dug deeper into the earth.
Are there any reports among the Cobaltville archives that mention the area?
I'll check.
While Bri was tapping out commands on the keyboard, Lakesh kept watch over the Raider wags. They drove into one of the canyons. One by one, they began to disappear from the screen. Nearly 3 hours after the initial attack, a few of the convoy wags were still aflame. Black smoke twisted into the clear sky. A horde of vultures and other carrion birds warred with flies for the corpses that were already starting to stink from the heat. The air smelled of smoke and the taint of burned flesh. Kane looked at the scene and seemed totally untouched by it. Brigid, nauseous from the smell, resented him for it. Kane was one of the most emotional people she'd ever met. He either felt something or he didn't. She watched him looking out over the battlefield where so many people had been killed in so ruthless a manner, obviously feeling nothing at all. It was only a further indication of the basic differences between them. Domi walked ahead of them, checking through the burned wags and dead bodies. Her enthusiasm for the scavenger hunt was apparent. She reached into an overturned wag and hauled out a body burned beyond recognition.
How long were they here after the attack, Grant?
An hour.
They took the weapons and ammo.
He glanced at a wag that had its hood up, revealing the place where the engine had been.
And parts.
Like a bunch of fucking rats cleaning a corpse. They had power tools, Kane, hooked up to gasoline-powered generators on three of the trucks, used gasoline they siphoned from the convoy wags. Then they stripped the wags fast as a mech crew back in Cobaltville with a grudge force breathing down their necks. They knew their stuff.
They also took time to kill every person they could catch.
Kane looked down at two of the bodies splayed in front of him, one male and one female. Each caught a bullet between the eyes.
Methodical. They took their time, even though it was only an hour. Every person knew their assignment.
Less than a dozen people escaped this, Kane. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
It means the raiders are good, but they're not good enough to do it all. That's a good sign. Hey, Grant, did they lose any wags?
Three.
I don't see them.
You won't. They fixed two of them up and got them running again, chained up the third one and pulled it after them. They still had people working on the downed wags when we slipped off. We thought they might have been coming around to this side of the river, so we left. I don't know for sure how long they stayed, but it couldn't have been much longer.
How are the fuel tanks in the Sandcat?
We could use some.
Right. We'll check the wags here, see if there's any gasoline left. When word gets out about this massacre, anybody who isn't known in this area is probably going to get a face full of lead and get asked questions later.
Kane finished topping off the final spare jerrycans they'd rummaged from the ruined wags. Despite the raiders' best efforts, they'd missed five of the cans. Enough gas still remained in a few of the wags and their spare tanks to fill them. He and Grant stored them inside the Sandcat's cockpit. Brigid had stayed away from him as they'd sorted through the battlefield. He'd been aware of it, but he didn't know the cause. To Grant, Domi, and him, taking necessary equipment and gear from the dead was a matter of course. Mags were trained to salvage equipment, to know what was repairable and what was a waste of time and effort to cart back. Domi had lived the same kind of existence, only on much meaner terms. He stayed conscious of the passage of time. Chances were no one would happen along and discover the battlefield, but the raiders were putting more distance between them. Kane walked back to the Sandcat just as Brigid poked her head out of the door looking for him.
Kane, it's Lakesh. He thinks he knows where the raiders went.
Kane quickened his steps and climbed into the Sandcat, joining Brigid. Domi and Grant were already there, listening to Lakesh.
It's a Mag Deathbird squadron en route from Cobaltville. The raiders seem to have vanished near what used to be Dinosaur National Monument.
Dinosaur National Monument? What's there?
I don't know, friend Kane. There were no files on it at the Cobaltville archives. Unless darling Brigid remembers some chance entry that I wasn't able to turn up.
I'd never heard of the place until you just mentioned it.
What about military installations? Usually the gateways are placed around military installations or government offices.
There were none that I know of, friend Grant. Nor have I been able to find any mention of any such places there.
But you're sure the gateway is there?
Friend Kane, I watched the raiders' wags disappear myself. There can be no other explanation.
Grant, let's get in gear and check this out.
Right.
Grant drove the Sandcat north, putting miles between them and the battlefield. When they'd left, the vultures had descended en masse again. Kane relaxed in the thinly cushioned seat, grateful for the Sandcat's small attempt at luxury. Days of riding the motorcycle had left him worn and tired.
Maybe they just entered a cavern there.
And should they have done exactly as you suggest, wouldn't such behavior still warrant searching the area?
Yeah.
I think we should return to Cerberus. There's some information we need.
Kane turned in his seat and faced her, eyebrows raised.
What information? If Lakesh had any damn information, he'd give it to us. Or he'd lie to us and never admit it.
Dear Bridget, time may very well be of the essence. Pry and I are going to be able to give you a SATCOM link-up that will allow you to tap into Cerberus's files over the comp links there in the Sandcat. I'll notify you as soon as Pry has everything in place here. Such a comm band will have to be heavily encrypted and concealed from the scanners Cobaltville has in place.
You don't know who Ambika is, do you?
No, friend Kane. I honestly do not.
She's a bloodthirsty bitch. If she could have, she'd have killed everyone at the convoy. Damn near did it as it was. She's gonna be dangerous to be around.
I understand that, friend Grant. Based on your description of her and her behavior, I think she'd be the perfect person to consider for an annexation of sorts.
Tell you something about that woman, Lakesh. She's triple tough and she doesn't give me the perception that she's looking for somebody to annex her.
There is an old saying that goes somewhat like this. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. What I see before us is a singular opportunity to perhaps enlist a fellow compatriot in our battle against Baron Cobalt. It's an avenue I feel we must explore.
Ambika's got an army. She's got a hiding place. Maybe she'll not feel so friendly toward us.
Darling as Domi, I feel certain that with all the things I have at my disposal here at Cerberus, I can find something that she'd find desirable.
Kane noticed that Lakesh didn't say we. When it came to plans and objectives, Lakesh rarely used the plural pronoun. Unless he was trying to win them over to his side.
Why should we be interested in her? She's running a high profile, something we've worked against. Remember the magistrates that Baron Cobalt sent against Cerberus?
We should be interested because Ambika goes out and kicks ass, something we're rarely in the position to do. We keep a low profile because we have to. There's not enough of us.
Friend Kane is correct in his observations. It will take years to put together an army and effect a successful campaign against the baronies. I don't know how many years I have left to me, in spite of Dr. DeFore's considerable skills and my own tenacity for self-preservation.
Old bastard will probably outlive us all.
I strongly feel that this opportunity shouldn't be passed up.
So do I.
Kane looked back at Bridget and saw that she looked unhappy with the decision. He wasn't going to argue the point.
What do you suggest, Lakesh? Face-to-face with Ambika?
Should the situation arise and such action be warranted, I leave that decision in your hands. Pry is sending the last known coordinates now. Lakesh out.
Kane refrained from making the observation that there had been damn few decisions left in their hands about the whole matter. But for now, Lakesh's agenda met his. Ambika was a possibility that had to be investigated, weighed, and judged.
Lakesh said there were 27 wags that disappeared up there. Bridget and I only counted 20.
Then she managed to salvage 7 from the convoy.
2 of the Sandcats were missing. Grant and I counted 6. Only 4 were there now.
I'm impressed. She took out the mag force and the convoy and drove away with a 30% increase in her rolling stock.
Being destructive doesn't mean she would be a good investment for us.
It's not just about being destructive. Ambika rolled into this hell zone knowing it was a trap. She pulled the mag's teeth, quashed the convoy, and netted an increase of ordnance and transportation. That's strategy, Baptiste, and a lot of courage. I do respect that. I respect the hell out of it.
She performed executions at the end of it. Killing all those people wasn't necessary.
It was if you wanted to send a message no one could ignore.
That's right. I suppose you've got experience in that, don't you?
Before he could say anything, she went back to the storage compartment. Kane curbed the impulse to say anything. The Sandcat was too damn small, and they had too far to go to express the frustration and anger her words had stirred up in him. He glanced over at Grant. Wisely, Grant and Domi said nothing. Kane gazed out at the rolling hills and plunging canyons. Trees covered the landscape, green and tall, filled with dank shadows. They'd entered the tree line less than an hour ago. The battle zone at Dead Man's Waltz Canyon lay 2.5 hours hard travel behind them. Night was starting to touch the eastern sky. Kane checked the sensors he'd set for thermographic properties, with an alarm tag for anything larger than a raccoon. They'd spotted plenty of those. When they'd first entered the forest, it had been squirrels. Now it was raccoons. The trail they followed wasn't clearly marked. The Sandcat had to push over a lot of small trees and tear through underbrush. The 750-horsepower engine met the task easily, but the ride got rough.
Ambika must have another way into and out of the forest. She wouldn't take a route that would lead someone to her. Anybody follows us, we're gonna have an easy time of it.
Can't be helped.
They crested another hill, and Kane peered down into the darkness before him. The Sandcat stuttered, sliding for just a moment before coming to a stop.
Shit, but that's a long way down.
Before them, a canyon split the ridge, the ground falling away steeply. Treetops showed beyond and below the rim, stretching down into a darkness Kane couldn't penetrate with his naked eye. Even the night sight couldn't reach the bottom. Kane locked the right track and powered the Sandcat around, dropping below the ridgeline and following the edge of the canyon at what he hoped was a safe distance. Tension knotted in his belly, but he didn't feel the Sandcat wallowing in any loose earth that might slide out from under them. It took a half hour to find the end of the canyon and get back onto the bearing Lakesh had given them. The forest deepened and grew taller. Periodically, deer set off the night sight alarm.
A man could live in this forest with all this game around. Gotta make you wonder why no one does.
The forest rolled on by them for another 40 minutes as they navigated canyons that looked as if they'd been cut into the ground with a blunt axe. There was no rhyme or reason to them, and Kane didn't know if they'd existed before the nuke cost or had been created by it. He was drenched with sweat as they pulled into one of the small clearings they'd found along the way. He noted the path cutting through the forest. Closer inspection revealed that it had been worn down to the stone foundation, and something wet gleamed on the path ahead of them. Kane got out. The Sin Eater was on his arm, and he popped it into his hand reflexively. His finger rested on the abbreviated firing stud by the time his boots touched the ground. He went forward, his point man senses alert to all the movement in the forest around them. So far, all they'd seen was animals. Movement burst through the treetops, coming in from the left. Kane raised his arm, tracking the motion with the Sin Eater automatically, knowing Grant had stepped over to cover his back. On the Sandcat, Domi held the USMG-73. A large owl fanned its wings out suddenly, grabbing a tree branch overhead with its thick claws. Kane had his sights set in the center of its body.
Clear.
Clear.
Kane walked forward to the gleaming spot in the middle of the road. Now that he was looking for them, he saw some behind them, and others yet coming. He knelt in a crouch he could move out of at a moment's notice and dragged his fingers through the wet spot. It was slick between his fingers, and smelling it identified it at once.
Oil. One or more of the wags Ambika took is leaking.
At least we know we're on the right track.
They returned to the Sandcat and started forward again. With the coordinates Lakesh had given them, forward was the only way to go. The trail played out less than a mile farther on, dead-ending up against a stone wall that rose over 100 feet nearly straight up. Kane let the Sandcat idle while they surveyed the area. The trail remained narrow up to the point it ended against the rock wall. Oil spots dotted the stone road, mute testimony that the wags had passed that way. But there was no indication where they'd gone.
Maybe a lift of some sort. There could be a cave higher up.
A lift to move 27 wags? Nah. Even if it was motorized and still in good shape, you're talking about a hell of a lot of time.
Then maybe they just vanished. You figure it out.
Perhaps you could try looking at the night sight display.
Kane did. It showed the wall exactly as Kane saw it, except with one difference. On the screen, a low rectangular spot appeared on the face of the wall, darker than the rest of the stone around it.
Heat shows up on the thermographic scan. Notice how the rock around that rectangle is lighter than the rectangle itself?
So, the rock absorbed the sun all day. That's why it's still holding residual heat.
Exactly. It presented a reflective surface to the sun. That rectangle you see obviously didn't. It's showing the chill that must be inside the cave.
You think cave's in there?
Yes. That's the only explanation for the shape we're seeing, and for the difference in the temperatures.
A door?
Look at the ground. If there was a door, there'd be scuff marks.
Only if it opened outward.
Then there'd be hinge joints.
Maybe they're concealed.
Either way, there's your entrance to the cave where Ambika and her army vanished. But I'm betting it's something else.
What?
A hollow imager. The quickest door to get through if someone was in a hurry. Drive up to it. We'll know soon enough.
Even if you're right, Baptiste, you're only half right.
He could tell by the look in her eyes that he'd angered her, but she kept it in.
Why?
Maybe you're right about it being a hollow imager, but you can't just drive up to it.
Gonna be booby-trapped.
Yeah.
I'll give you a hand looking.
Kane stood and breathed in the fresh air. It was laden with the rich scent of pine sap, not carrying the taste of alkaline dust at all.
Grant, before we go in, let's get hard.
Bridget, tense, watched as Kanan Grant silently dressed in the black polycarbonate armor of the Magistrate Division, and the old fear of the Magistrate image filled her. They were egotistical, testosterone-laden brutes lacking qualities of mercy and compassion, tools in the hands of the barons to batter a recalcitrant population into submission. The black polycarbonate helmet removed the last vestiges of Kane's humanity. The high-planed face disappeared behind the helmet, leaving only a small portion of the mouth and chin revealed. The visor masked his gaze. Kane and Grant hammered each other on the shoulders, making sure the armor was fully sealed. Then they popped the sin-eaters into their hands and walked toward the blank wall. Kane stretched a hand out, reaching for the wall. He brushed his fingers against it for a moment, then shoved his hand forward. It disappeared so suddenly that Bridget at first believed it had been lopped off. She resisted the impulse to look at Kane's feet. Then Kane took two steps forward and disappeared through the wall. Manacled, his legs throbbing from pain because the painkillers had worn off over an hour ago, Kearney was led through the brightly lighted hallway to Baron Cobalt's receiving room. His baronial guard escort sneered at his obvious distress. Their scorn was enough to make him reach inside himself and walk, though every move was filled with mind-shrieking agony. He'd thought about running, trying to lose himself somewhere in the Utah desert. Only there was no place to go. Nearly 2 hours after Kane had left him, he'd been spotted by the arriving Deathbirds. After his identity had been confirmed, he'd been flown back to Cobaltville. The mags who'd brought him back made no effort to conceal how they felt about his survival. According to them, he should have died with his team. He was no longer considered one of them. Kearney fiercely hoped that the Baron would see fit to elevate him to an administrative post, even higher in the division, where he could make all of them pay for the things they'd said about him. While he'd been sailing under the influence of the painkillers, he'd almost convinced himself that was going to happen. Inside the twilight room, Kearney paused, about to fall. The two guardsmen reached for him, impatient. He forced his legs to take his weight again. Whatever his immediate future held, he was going to meet it on his own 2 feet. He walked through the 4 rooms to reach the 5th. He stopped in front of the Golden Veil.
Kearney, you have failed us in many ways. You did not get Chapman's shipment through, even though I expressed to you how important it was. You did not destroy the resistance or show the populace of the mining territories that Cobaltville and the wishes of its baron are to be given preferential treatment without hesitation. In fact, you've shown only that we can be beaten. This is totally unacceptable.
She said her name was Ambika.
Ambika?
Yes. She said it like it was something you would know. And if you knew that name, if you knew what she was capable of, then it was you who failed.
He knew his words were sacrilege, knew it even before the lightning-fast hand of the guard to his left swung up and hammered him in the mouth. Kearney went down to one knee, refusing to go down all the way. The taste of blood filled his mouth. Crimson droplets spattered the Golden Veil.
You sent us into that engagement undermanned. It was you that chilled all of those men. And you'd have chilled me if she didn't want me to bring back a message.
The guard on the left drew back a boot.
Wait.
The guard drew back. The dimly lit silhouette approached the blood-spattered veil.
What message did she give you, Kearney?
She told me to tell you to stay the fuck out of the Utah territories. She said if you tried to interfere with what she's doing over there, she's gonna hand you your goddamn head. And you know what?
Despite the fear that filled him, Kearney unfettered the rage that boiled in a knot in his stomach.
What?
I think she's gonna do it. The way she came out of those hills, out of nowhere, and your people here couldn't even tell us they were there, and the way she slapped those death birds out of the sky, she knows what she's doing.
Of course she does. She's made of much sturdier stock than just human genes. Ambika is a formidable opponent, but not formidable enough to stand against me. Sandstrom?
Lord Baron?
I need a man to hunt down Ambika. A strong man who can face her and be intelligent enough to work through whatever countermeasures she offers. Find me that man.
Let me do it.
You? You come back to this vill, to my private chambers, a disgrace, Kearney, and you speak sedition in my presence. My presence! You suffer to live better than many others in Cobaltville by my choosing, Not yours. Never yours.
Give me the chance, Lord Baron.
Now that he'd vented his anger, Kearney regretted his actions. He was aware of how badly his legs hurt, of how weak he'd become.
To embarrass me further? Possibly to betray me?
I won't do that, Lord Baron.
No, you won't.
From the corner of his eye, Kearney saw Sandstrom move. Kearney felt the combat knife ram through the underside of his chin. Then a cold numbness spread rapidly, up from his chin into his mouth, past his sinus cavities and up into his brain. Blood washed away his vision. Even in dying, there was a part of him that had wanted to laugh. He hadn't told the Baron that Kane had been there too. And if Kane and Ambika got together, there'd be no stopping the judgment that would descend on the Baron. Kearney wished them both well, praying that they would take his vengeance for him. Then felt the waiting blackness take him into its cold embrace. Kane grabbed a fistful of dust from the floor and threw it before him. The powder swirled through the air in front of him, then collided with the light beams that crisscrossed the open space on the other side of the hollow wall. Despite the gray-black dust, the electric eye beams glowed with a pale indigo tint.
Nice. They've also got subsonic emitters just inside the doorway to keep out the animals and insects.
Grant played a microlight over the explosives mounted on the walls, floor, and ceiling on the other side of the electric eye beams.
And if we'd rolled through the doorway without checking, we'd have been buried under a ton of rock. It would have been an inconvenience to Ambika to dig it back out again if she wanted, but it would have shut down immediate pursuit and probably sent a signal to her.
There's a sec cam.
Kane pointed his own microlight on the small unit mounted high on the craggy wall behind the beams. On the other side of the wall of light beams, the cave stretched back and curved around to the left, disappearing into the darkness.
If someone were watching, they'd have reacted by now.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's home. Let's get the electric eyes disarmed.
Baptiste, we got some explosives to clear and some security stuff to disable before you can come in. But I don't think anybody's in here, or they'd be here by now. I'll let you know when we're clear.
Roger that.
Bridget slid on her rectangular archivist glasses and turned her attention back to the comp unit. The comlink to Cerberus was being handled on encrypted burst transmission, making them even harder for any death birds that might be in the area to find. And it would be damn near impossible to trace. She established parameters for her searches, constructed the queries, sent them, and waited 20 minutes for her results. The first few files she received had to do with cultural history and literary references to the name Ambika. She spelled it different ways, since they'd only heard it from Kearney, not seen it written. The references were interesting, but had nothing to do with the present situation. Ambika's name had obviously been chosen for a reason. On her next round of searches, she met with some resistance. Error messages filled her comp screen, blocking her attempts. Bridget reframed her searches and sent them off again. The error messages came back, but this time they included file extensions where the errors had occurred. She read through them, and fear ran gossamer tendrils down her spine. She culled through the problematic symbology and found words buried within. Over Project Excalibur, folder Ambika, Reconception, Beowulf. Intrigue won out over Bridget's fear. Lakesh had forbidden communication from their present location except by emergency only. Bridget stared at the gibberish files, knowing someone had tampered with the access, and she had a good idea who, she just didn't know why. Movement outside made her look up. Kane and Grant returned, pulling their mag helmets off. Bridget couldn't help but feel relieved to see Kane's human face. The two former mags climbed into the Sandcat, Kane in the pilot's chair, Grant in the co-pilot's chair.
There's room to drive in, just like they did. Let's see what we can find.
Kane guided the Sandcat through the cavernous tunnel that cut through the heart of the mountain range. His thoughts were as dark as the shadows that clung to the route ahead of them. Ambika's whole operation smacked of something much bigger than a woman risen to Queen of the Raiders. The fact that she was using a gateway that even Lakesh didn't know about was astounding, if Lakesh were telling the truth about his ignorance of Ambika or the gateway. The grade of the pathway descended into the mountain. Cracks were visible in the walls. Usually, the surface of the walls was uniformly smooth, but some places bore marks from digging tools.
Tunnel looks old, except for the places where the walls were dug into. The curve we went around last time
doesn't look like it was part of the original tunnel. I saw it. Evidently, the original tunnel collapsed sometime after it was built.
A couple hundred years ago, maybe. Which brings to mind, if everybody else has lost this gateway off the maps, how did Mbika know about it?
I don't know. Turn up anything, Baptiste?
No. At least nothing concrete as to who Mbika is or how this place came to be here.
Nothing concrete?
My search tagged a corrupt file. The file itself was originally part of Over Project Excalibur.
Did you talk to Lakish?
I left a message. He hasn't returned it.
The Sandcat rounded another turn, and the corridor ended in front of a pair of massive vanadium alloy doors. Kane braked the wag a few feet from the entrance.
Looks big enough to take the cat into.
Then we'll take it. But I'm walking point. In case we run into trouble inside, we won't have all our eggs in one basket.
Or blasters.
Kane nodded. He pulled on his helmet and refastened the chin guard. Then he keyed the door open and stepped out.
Bridget.
Bridget slid into the seat as Kane closed the door.
Careful, Kane.
He nodded, wishing she hadn't chosen that moment to be conciliatory. Walking into the redoubt, he needed to be all mag, no softness, no weakness. Thinking about Bridget Baptiste at the right moment sometimes brought about both feelings. He flexed his wrist tendons and snapped the sin eater into his hand and walked forward. He paused by the keypad next to the vanadium doors. He punched in the 532 sequence that unlocked every redoubt door he'd ever been to. The doors separated and rolled back into housings inside the rock quickly and quietly, as if they'd just had maintenance. Weak light spilled out of the room and threw a rectangle over the Sandcat's nose. The corridor stretched on beyond it like a colossal throat. Kane went forward, knowing Grant would signal Bridget when to move after him. The redoubt walls were crisp and clean. There were no graffiti or signs of disuse. Only the weak illumination suggested that it might not be working up to standard. A clear armaglass plaque on the wall drew Kane's attention. In disbelief, he saw that it held the entire redoubt's layout. There were three main branches. One led to the medtech lab, one to the armory, and one to the gateway. All of them were clearly, unbelievably marked. The designation above it read Redoubt Oscar. At some time in the past, someone had crossed out Oscar with two smears of black paint and replaced it with the word Minerva.
Minerva, the Roman goddess of wisdom. That may be significant.
How so?
We'll probably find out sooner than later.
Kane turned away, choosing to go down the middle corridor, the one that had the familiar oil spots they'd tracked. According to the map, it led to the gateway. He kept walking, the Sandcat lumbering after him like some great beast. A couple of hours of searching found a very empty redoubt, and Bridget digging through the comp files.
Okay, so nobody's here. So what do we do now?
Kane looked around the gateway's control room. Compared to some that he'd been in, this one was huge. Comp equipment, consoles, dials, and switches filled all the walls around the room. The massive Mattrans unit dominated the whole center of the room, leaving little space to navigate among all the equipment and desks. The medtech unit and the armory were bare, all supplies taken. Judging from the oil spots on the concrete floor, Mbika had rolled her army into the gateway and sent them through. The Mattrans unit was only large enough to hold one of the wags at a time, but Kane knew they'd had plenty of time to be long gone.
Staying here isn't an option, so we're going. The real question is where?
I pulled the transit files from the gateway comp. Only one gateway code has been used.
Can you tell where it is?
No. The numbering doesn't have anything to do with the codes I know from the other gateways we've been to. It could literally be anywhere.
We've found someone's own private back door.
Having that code, we could make the jump to wherever it is they've gone.
That's one option. The second option is to jump from here to Cerberus. Personally, I'd like to squeeze Lakish until we get some more answers. He sold me on the idea of finding out what Chapman was hauling, and we sort of did. We might not know where exactly he's getting it, but we know where to start looking if we need to. And there's the possibility that Chapman is still alive. There were a few who escaped today. But there's a problem with making the jump to Cerberus. If Mbika is as good as she seems to be, she might be able to get the Cerberus code from the gateway comp here after we go. We'd be letting her into our back door.
We could try to get back to the Dark's Overland and the cat, but I really wouldn't want to now. Baron Cobalt and his mags will be trying to make their bones over the massacre that took place today.
Hold up here a few days, then go back to Dark's.
That makes sense. It would be the safest course open to us.
Unless Mbika decides to drag her army back through here for another run at Cobalt's forces. If I'm going to be a target, Baptiste, I'd rather be one in motion.
Moving targets aren't safe from lightning either.
Kane glared at her. It wasn't her fault, he knew, but the anger at Lakesh's machinations demanded an outlet.
What we should do is jump back to Cerberus and let Lakesh deal with some of this shit he's brought down on us.
As I recall, it didn't take much pushing on Lakesh's part to get you to accept this mission. If you want to blame someone for this mess, try looking a little closer to home.
If he'd given us all the information...
You'd have done what? Assumed you could handle it anyway?
You're right, Baptiste. I'm as much to blame as Lakesh for us being here.
Well, maybe for us being here, but not for keeping us in the dark. I tried to get files on Ambika, but I was blocked at that end. Lakesh is responsible for keeping that from us.
Kane locked his gaze on the gateway. The gateway's armorglass walls were translucent, as they always were, but these were the color of fried egg white mixed with swirls of pale blue.
If we jump, we can make our way back to Cerberus from wherever it is.
Be interesting to see where that Ambika bitch ended up.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, we go. Anybody feels any differently, you better speak up now.
No one did. While the others entered the unit on foot, Kane drove the Sandcat into the Mattrans unit, parking it in the center of the six-sided chamber. Hexagonal plates studded the floor and ceiling. Kane climbed out and secured the vehicle. They made themselves comfortable, then Kane pulled the door shut, activating the jump sequence. The panels on the floor and ceiling started to glow. Then white vapor curled down from the ceiling plates and rose from the floor. Fuzzy electric sparkles glittered throughout the mist. Heaviness settled over Kane, and the world spun away from him in a cataclysmic rush.
Lakesh.
Wearily, Lakesh lifted his chin from his thin chest. For a panicked moment, he wasn't sure where he was. He was so used to playing at a number of schemes, balancing them one against the other, that he couldn't remember when he'd last gone to sleep or what he'd been dealing with. One wrong word at the wrong time, and the whole house of cards he'd built would come tumbling down around his ears. And the cost for his mistakes could be counted in lives. He shook his head, focusing on the voice.
Lakesh?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Bry.
You asked me to tell you when Kane and the others jumped from the gateway in the Utah territories?
Carefully, the blood in his veins feeling sluggish from age and accumulated fatigue, Lakesh pushed himself to his feet and crossed the room to Bry's console. His head swam with the required effort.
You're sure they're gone?
Just now, only moments ago.
Bry pointed to his display. Lakesh studied the angular planes of the mountain that hid the redoubt. Before, there had been four glowing orange dots that had marked Kane and the others in the hidden redoubt. Now there was nothing.
Where have they gone, friend Bry?
I haven't got a clue. I've widened the scope on the camera, taking in nearly the whole northeastern corner now, but I'm still not picking them up.
They're much farther away than that.
You know where they went?
Quite possibly. Try searching the Western Isles.
Bry turned slowly to face him, his eyes retreating from the comp screen.
The Western Isles?
Yes, friend Bry. The Western Isles.
Lakesh ignored the other man's look, intent on the map. Back during the Newcost, when the bombs had flown, the Russians had also triggered Earthshaker bombs planted by their submarines along the fault and fracture lines in what was then called the Pacific Ocean. ICBM missiles had pounded the Cascades from western Canada down to California at the same time. The concentrated destruction initiated a series of volcanic eruptions and earthquakes. Inside the anthill, Lakesh had listened to reports of incoming tidal waves from the Pacific Ocean that reached as much as a mile high. Pummeled by the volcanic activity, the earthquakes, and the invasion of the sea, California had sunk. When it was over, the Pacific Ocean lapped at the Rocky Mountains. After a time, the sea had receded somewhat, leaving islands in its wake. Some of the islands were the high points of what had been California, or regions that became more elevated with the destruction caused by the shifting tectonic plates. Still other islands had been created by the volcanic activity. For more than 100 years, the area had been rendered inhospitable by volcanic toxicity and rad fallout. There'd been reports from traders and scavengers of encounters with muti beasts, stickies, and scalies. Baron Cobalt had never seen fit to explore what might be out there at present. The Western Isles remained a mystery, one that had never overly interested Lakesh because he knew how severely the cataclysm had struck there. He had all but forgotten about the rogue agenda Will Longley had begun while working at Over Project Excalibur. But Grant's description of Ambika had triggered Lakesh's memory. He remembered Longley's reputation, if not the man himself. He had been attached to Mission Invictus, a subdivision of Excalibur, working under Dr. Conant O'Brien. He recollected rumors that Longley had been eliminated as a security risk. The one occasion he had spent any real time with O'Brien, when they attended a Broadway revival of Guys and Dolls on New Year's Eve 2000, she had provided him with the true story. Longley's nickname of Wild Will derived from his tendency to make semi-crazed leaps of reasoning regarding the Invictus Project. Using O'Brien's research as springboards, he made several aborted attempts to improve her mutagenic process, and in the process jeopardized the entire undertaking. Despite a number of reprimands, Wild Will could not be repressed, and he was dismissed from his post. He disappeared, and a lot of classified data vanished with him. A few months later, the tale of Longley's assassination began circulating. But though the missing data were never recovered, O'Brien suspected he had not been apprehended at all. She believed Longley to be in hiding, working on his own project, which dovetailed with the Invictus Project. Lakesh remembered how bitter O'Brien had been, but also regretful. She admired and envied Longley's genius. At the same time, she despised his erratic behavior. Longley's research in the field of genetics had allowed Lakesh to influence Kane's own birth. Bry's fingers tapped the keyboard rapidly.
I've got them.
Turning from the Mercator wall map, Lakesh consulted Bry's comp display. The four glowing orange dots had resurfaced. He glanced at the longitude and latitude.
Where are they, friend Bry?
As near as I can figure, they're on an island 10 or 20 miles north of what used to be known as Los Angeles.
Amazing.
I can try to open up a comm channel.
What are their vital signs like?
They're all within acceptable ranges.
Then don't try to open a comm channel, friend Bry. If someone in that area has access to a comm scanner, we might well set the hounds loose on them. Friend Kane will manage.
Kane opened his eyes, feeling cold and limp, completely washed out. His chest ached. Bridget lay against his shoulder, still unconscious from the jump. She was warm against him, smelling of the road and the hardship they'd faced, and somehow smelling womanly even over that. Gazing around the Matran's chamber, Kane spotted Grant, still out of it, his massive arms dwarfing Domi as he held her. The albino had curled into a fetal ball against Grant's broad chest. The sandcat, though, looked to have weathered the jump just fine. Nothing moved in the shadows beyond the pale chartreuse armorglass walls. As a matter of precaution, he snapped the sin-eater into his hand.
Anything?
Not yet.
Kane's throat felt parched, as if he'd been without water for days. Concerned, he rolled his wrist over and checked his cron. Barely 4 minutes had elapsed since they'd initiated the jump sequence. He couldn't help wondering how far they'd traveled in that small amount of time. Domi woke next, tensing for a moment, then uncurling like a cat, stretching unconcernedly over Grant's broad frame. She pressed herself across Grant's groin, totally unembarrassed by her own behavior. Grant wasn't amused. He scooped Domi off of him, irritation showing on his face. Kane didn't understand why Grant didn't respond to Domi's obvious interest. Even as friendly as Kane and Grant were with each other, Kane knew there was a distance between them, enough of a distance that if one or the other were lost, the survivor could go on. Grant had had a hard time with that after Olivia's loss. Maybe that was what the big man was afraid of when he looked at Domi. It wasn't about what he would be giving up in terms of personal freedom. It was about embracing the potential for loss. Kane glanced down at Bridget. If it was true that they had lived other lives, that their bond stretched across centuries, then he and Bridget had lost each other before. Or had they never had the chance to have each other? Maybe whatever tied them together also conspired to keep them apart. Subconsciously, it was possible they both knew that. To embrace those feelings meant losing each other. He touched her red-gold hair, stroking it softly. Then she opened her eyes and looked up at him. Realizing where she was, she pushed herself away. The movement was too quick after recovery, and her stomach rebelled. Kane pushed himself up and crossed to the sandcat long enough to get one of the wipes from the medkit under the front seat. He handed it to Bridget. The nausea subsided after a moment.
Thanks.
You gonna be okay?
Give me a minute.
Sure. Grant and I are going to wreck the redoubt. Make sure we're as alone as it looks like we are.
Do you know where we are?
Not yet.
If you'll wait a few minutes, I'll be able to go with you.
I'd rather you and Domi stay here with the cat. That way you can cover our backs in case things go wrong.
He saw the bright lights in her jade-colored eyes that told him she wanted to argue, but she didn't.
Fine.
Kane took one of the copperheads from the Sandcat and slipped his helmet back on. The built-in night vision capability stripped away some of the shadows on the other side of the armorglass. Comps and consoles covered the walls of the other room. He glanced at Grant, fully clad, behind him.
Let's go.
The wreck took 17 minutes to discover the redoubt they'd arrived in was laid out exactly like the one in the Utah territories. As with the other one, this redoubt had also been stripped of weapons and medical supplies, and no one was inside. The telltale oil spots gleamed on the floor. Bridget had found a series of switches on the wall. Soft light now gilded the walls and removed most of the darkness. Kane and Grant rejoined Domi and Bridget in the redoubt's abbreviated command center.
The place is empty.
Know where we are?
Not yet. We could go outside and take a reading with the mini-sextant, but we were thinking maybe we could get some information from the comps first.
I'm working on it.
We're gonna move the cat out toward the main corridor, in case somebody decides to come back.
While Bridget worked, Kane fired up the Sandcat and moved it forward, effectively blocking the corridor's entry into the command center. If needed, the USMG-73 heavy machine guns could easily cover their hasty retreat while backing into the MATRANS unit.
What about Bath? Saw showers in the other redoubt. Must be some here. I could use it. So can Grant.
Kane nodded. They were in hostile territory, but they'd all been run to death over the past few days. The showers were close enough that they could return in a hurry, and the psychological benefit of being clean was no small thing.
There are sec vids on the main doors.
I'll bring them up.
Bridget tapped a few more keys, and immediately two display screens in a group of 16 on the wall opened up to the left of Bridget's keyboard. They both showed overlapping fields of view inside the main corridor.
This is the inside view, and this is the outside.
The displays were in color, but the night sky washed out most of the hues, leaving only grays and blacks. The exterior of the vanadium doors had been ravaged, but they had held. They sat against a rugged hill, inset slightly. Old scars in the rock around the doors showed the effects of explosives being used in an obvious failed attempt to blow them open.
Can you rotate the cams? Scan the territory around the doors?
I can do better than that. There are cams mounted farther out that should give us a better perspective.
Almost immediately, four of the cam displays came up with unit unavailable written across the screens.
They've been taken offline.
Maybe whoever couldn't get in through the front doors decided to take out their frustration on the cams they found. As long as we've got visuals in here, we should be safe enough to wash up.
Yes! Come on, Grant! You scrub my back, I scrub yours!
No. I'll stand guard, then you'll stand guard. Let's go.
Grant steered Domi out of the room, trying to ignore her teasing, imploring glances.
At least it's still dark here.
That means we're still approximately in the same time zone.
We could try contacting Lakesh.
Not until we know where we are. We're exposed here already. There's no reason to call attention to it. Can I get you something to eat?
No, thanks. I want to wait until I've had a shower. Maybe I'll be hungrier then.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'd rather wait. The shower sounds good to me, too.
Didn't you get any sleep last night?
Not much. There was too much noise coming up from Peabody's. I couldn't believe Domi slept through it.
You slept with Domi?
Leather at Baptiste. We shared a room. We were supposed to be together, remember? It would have looked suspicious if we'd slept apart. You're out on the road like that, you keep in mind there's safety in numbers.
Oh.
She took the bed, I slept on the floor. Maybe that's why the damn bar noise sounded so loud to me. You don't have anything to be concerned about.
The only thing I was concerned about is the tension your involvement with Domi could create between you and Grant at the moment.
Baptiste, do you realize you're insulting Domi as well as me? Kind of like when I asked you if Lakesh had told you anything he hadn't told us.
You're right. I had no business saying that, and even less asking.
Kane struggled to try to think of something to say, and couldn't.
Go ahead and eat.
I'd rather wait.
Why?
I thought that if Domi and Grant were willing to wait, we might all eat together.
It'd be easier just eating as you want.
There's a reason mags were fed in mess halls.
That's where the food was?
It reminded you that you weren't alone. I thought that given the situation and the opportunity we have here, we might consider that.
Bridget dropped her gaze to the keyboard. Kane felt foolish, but his answer had been true.
We're going to try to find Ambika?
Yeah. She's got an army out there, Baptiste, and she's been hitting Baron Cobalt where he hurts. Lakish could very well be right in thinking that an alliance would be mutually beneficial.
For what? Even if Baron Cobalt could somehow be removed from office, then what? Someone would take his place.
But they wouldn't be able to marshal the same commitment from the people living in Cobaltville. Baron Cobalt rules because everyone in the Ville believes he's some kind of deified creature. Not everyone knows he's a hybrid created from Archon and human genes.
Chilling Baron Cobalt would only create a vacuum. Someone would rise to the top. Probably someone from the Magistrate Division.
Sure, but you've seen what's happened to Ragnarville after Tara chilled Baron Ragnar. Nobody there has the same power the Baron did. They're staging minor insurrections over there, and their mag division's more interested in consolidating the power base than in expanding their boundaries the way Cobalt is.
Yes.
Bridget kept tapping the keyboard, her attention divided between him and the comp.
Cobalt's gotten aggressive about getting the ore from the Utah territories. Do the math. What does he need that ore for? What's he planning on building?
I know where we are.
Where?
The Western Isles, near what used to be known as Los Angeles.
Kane showered, letting the hot waters sluice the dirt and fatigue from his body. He turned his face up to the water and closed his eyes. He used the bar of soap from the kit on the sand cat that they kept on hand for small patchwork that might become necessary if the radiator or gas tanks cracked. Filling his hands with soap, he washed his hair, then used the straight razor Grant loaned him to scrape the day's accumulation of whiskers from his face. The razor wasn't a personal grooming tool. It was a weapon Grant carried, a hideout blade for cutting out of one-percenter situations, a tool for getting out of close shaves rather than giving them. Kane figured it had probably cut more throats than whiskers. Grant kept the blade extremely sharp. Though Kane knew how to properly use it, the blade's sharpness still caused him to cut himself twice. When he was finished, he dressed in the clothes he'd taken off. The grime would wear back in quickly by doing that, but for the moment he felt clean. And despite being in the unknown redoubt, he even felt safe. Kane returned to the command center, picking up Grant, who'd stood guard outside the door. When he got there, he found a meal of self-heats had been laid out across one of the small desks. Domi grinned at him.
Bridget's idea to hold off eating till you had a shower. Great, huh?
Yeah. Thanks, Baptiste.
She smiled, faintly embarrassed. He sat and they ate, pretending they weren't about to step out into an unknown world first thing in the morning.